Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Good conversation with Nate Washington earlier this hour. Now we bring in Vince Ferrara. Normally joins us Mondays at this time. Had to push him to Tuesday this week. He was filling in on the midday show there on WNML in Knoxville yesterday. And Vince Ferrara is powered by TechCore, providing you top-of-the-line IT service and Turner Security Systems right here in Nashville. Vince, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. Appreciate you and appreciate TechCore. Can't wait to next time get to Nashville to go by and see those guys, Jamie and the crew. I know they do awesome work, so appreciate them supporting this segment.
All right. You know what? You know what else is being supported right now? Recruiting for the Vols. And they have yet again, they've done it again, right? I mean, did I see this yesterday? Did they flip a guy from Auburn to now their way?
Yeah, a local kid from King's Academy here in Knoxville, big lineman. And Tennessee is really, and I outlined this in one of my blogs, Tennessee already on the roster right now has 16 players from the Knoxville area, even a little bit extended in Morristown, with Morristown West kid. But in this area, 16 kids on the roster. Half of those are scholarship. The other half are walk-ons. So it's not like all walk-ons, but it's interesting. There is a good relationship between this coaching staff and local kids. Doesn't mean they get every player. They had a high-level offensive lineman, Brian Tucker from Catholic High School here in Knoxville, who they have a number of players from, and they were featured on national TV on Saturday in their first broadcast of games against Deion Sanders, who was in town, and his son. But they've got a number of kids from there, but Brian Tucker went to Clemson. So not getting everybody, but they need, the line of scrimmage is always a position area that they will continue to address. They need to actually, that's been an area of thought for 2021 and 2022 to continue to add to their group. So not surprising that they've added another big body to the group from the area, because they've been consistent at that, and like I said, have good relationships with a lot of the high school coaches, whether they have players or not. I talked to a lot of them in doing play by play for games, and I've tried to ask as many of them as possible, what's your contact with the Tennessee coaching staff, even if they don't have any players, and they say great, they touch base, and so they're doing a nice job over there. So I think that helps you once you do come around and there's a player that you want.
The SEC today put out their CBS Game of the Week, their schedule for this upcoming season. Starting on September 26th, you'll have Mississippi State at LSU. Looking down the line the following week, Texas A&M at Alabama, Georgia and Alabama, LSU and Auburn, Florida and Georgia, Alabama, LSU. See Tennessee on there. You a little surprised by that?
No, because it's not the full schedule. So it is SEC West heavy. I get that, but it's only about half of the schedule. And the open weeks happen to be Tennessee games against Georgia, Alabama, okay, Auburn, Florida, and I think Vanderbilt is the other one, and that would be unlikely. But so there's still opportunities against big opponents to get on to CBS. So I'm that's not a big deal. It doesn't surprise me. And they tried to encourage the networks to make as many advanced decisions as they could on those games. And Tennessee is one of those teams to where, depending on how the season goes, they could be that second high-level team to make it a really good matchup. Or if they're struggling through, some of their difficult games and they're hovering around 500, then it may seem more one-sided that you want to get to that week. So that Tennessee is sort of that fluid team that I think you do need to find out where they're at, if they in fact have taken that next step, if they're beating some of the big programs to where they're in the mix for the East, then you put them on there and then it's a great game. But I understand the wait and see on them. Some of those other teams are more known commodities, and then you can pick those games in advance. And you know, so I still think there's a good chance they'll get, you know, a couple two tree before it's all said and done on CBS.
Yeah, now that you say that, when you think about the ones that they haven't named yet, the open weeks, and you hear the opponent, yeah, that makes – I mean, they're going to get at least one, if not – you know, depends on their start, too. I mean, you know, I think there's a chance they for sure get in there for a couple. Real quick, just to slide away from football for just a second, what did you make of the news coming out yesterday that the NCAA – had trademarked Battle in the Bubble? I mean, you think that's where all this – I mean, we've had Gary Perry, Sean, and others. I mean, they're adamant. The people in the college basketball world, Vince, are adamant. Like, they are going to do whatever it takes. Like, they cannot miss another season, or especially more – they can't miss another year of the NCAA tournament, or we know what will happen. They feel all the vibe we're getting is they are bound and determined to do whatever it takes to pull this off. And the bubble thing was brought up to us a good while back, that they were having those talks of, you know, we've seen it work in other sports, and I'm sure they're watching too, that trying to find some hubs and just have a bunch of teams go there and that's where they stay or whatever. I don't know how it's all going to play out, but what did you make of that?
So there's a lot of layers to this. I'll try to be quick. Yeah, and it, first of all, it does not surprise me. Second of all, you know why the NCAA is so determined to make sure this happens is because that NCAA tournament money goes to them. Football, they're on the outside. So, of course, they have more of a vested interest to make sure that this happens. Now, that being said, it's not like it's not – a necessity. Rick Barnes even mentioned it. They have to get the NCAA tournament in. And in order for you to get the NCAA tournament in, you have to have some semblance of a regular season. So that means both must happen in some form or fashion. Also, you have to be able to, it can't be bubble singular. They can brand it that way. It has to be bubbles plural, because then you can have the smaller little short term, and that's the key, short term bubbles, to where you have kids there for a brief time as if they're going to Maui or the Bahamas or something like that for a little non-conference tournament. And then you have them there, and then it's just like regular travel, only they're maybe a little bit more restricted. That's how you can get away with not with that amateurism aspect of this. So, and I think the NCAA tournament will function in the same way, just like with regionals, where you have, you know, just a few teams in there and you sort it out. I think over a 4-day period, I think it will be bubbles plural, but they'll brand it with the singular. Another thing is, it's also not just necessarily for the NCAA tournament. I think it's also for some of those pre-conference tournaments. Because that's what Rick Barnes and I've heard other coaches talk about, is we all those and those tournaments that they originally had, you can put them together and then have like a week-long type of deal. Short-term, again, being the key. And then another thing they mentioned is that this is for multiple sports, not just for hoops. So I think some of those other Olympic sports, it'll be a little bit easier to have a shorter, condensed NCAA tournament to where you can do – the bubble type of scenario. And then, you know, once you leave a bubble, then you test and you go to another bubble. Maybe you spread it out a little bit more, but that's how you get away with the amateurism aspect of it and still keep it to where it is safe. So I absolutely think they're going to do whatever they need to. It's also a long way away for the basketball tournament. Hopefully we're not still in a situation where that's the only way you can safely do games. But, I mean, who knows? Between now and then, it's a long time.
Vince Ferrara is with us. Vince, do you get the sense, though, because doing the tournament that way is one thing, but executing the season is also a part of the discussion. There's been a lot of creative ideas thrown out there about modified bubbles just to get your conference games in or something. Do you sense that the communication and the planning, the creativity, as we sit here today on September 1st, knowing you've got a little more time than the football guys, but not making the same mistakes that football has made waiting to the last minute. Do you sense they're ahead of the curve on that?
Well, I think they're thinking through scenarios, Willie, like you mentioned, but they need to see how football works first. And I think they've been open to that, the coaches that I've heard talk about it. They need football to work and see how it works, learn from it, be better in it. It's a different scenario because you're talking about closed buildings as opposed to much bigger outdoor venues. So, and then again, by the time we get there, where are we at with coronavirus at that point? So they're going through the scenarios, and hopefully they will plan for it better than I think at times football did, that maybe it kind of hoped that this would go away by the time they got to it and then had to scramble to try to figure out how to execute the medical and things like that. But I do think they're working it out. But as far as predicting on how they'll do it, I'm not sure. The regular season conference – games, I mean, good luck doing a bubble with that kind of setup. I think that is much less likely, and I don't know how they make it work, because then you're doing longer periods of time and the amateurism thing is at stake. But they're having to think about these scenarios, but I don't think they're making decisions anything close to it yet.
So Vince, let's get back to, you said observing how football works. We're all doing that every day. We know Vanderbilt had to shut it down for a couple of days. They're back on the play on the practice field. Read a story about Auburn losing 16 players for a minimum of 17 days. That's a tough one that they're going to have to figure out a way to overcome. I guess so far so good with Tennessee in the day-to-day, the protocols. They haven't been hit with anything like that yet.
Yeah, LSU is another one that they've had some COVID struggles on campus. But Tennessee paused practice one day for COVID, and that was Friday. Jeremy Pruitt talked to the media, and he said that they were pausing practice or holding back practice because they had a few more COVID positives. He wouldn't put a number on it, but a few more sounds like, hey, they were being extra careful and wanted to make sure that it didn't spread beyond that. So they retested everybody, and they were awaiting the results back. Then they had adjusted their Saturday schedule already because the players and a lot of student-athletes participated in a peaceful march, anti-racism march on campus. And so they had adjusted their practice schedule to the afternoon for that, and they ended up getting back on the practice field in full pads on Saturday. So that's a really positive sign, no pun intended, that they did get the results back and they felt comfortable to get back onto the practice field that quickly after just a one-day pause to await on tests. So that's, I think, another kind of a good test run for them to figure these things out now. Just like we talked about all those false negatives in the NFL, that it might end up being a little bit of a blessing that something like that happened to them with the 77 that ended up being false positives. Well, you figure out that there's an issue along the way and how to run through your protocol after that. Well, this is a way for Tennessee to see how they can manage this. And if they need to wait on tests and skip a day's practice, that's what you do. And then you mitigate any concerns or trickle-down effect. So Tennessee largely has been able to avoid it, but it's just something I think a lot of these schools are going to have to monitor. Can you limit the damage? That's how you keep playing. And Tennessee seemed, in its first little hurdle, was able to do that and get back going.
I think that's going to be so important, is if you get one or two positives, can you keep that from becoming 6, 8, 10, 12, 20 positives, because we know it can happen that way if you're not right on top of it from the start. So Vince, let's talk actually on the field what you're seeing. In this day and age, even before the circumstances we're dealing with right now, coaches let you see a lot less of practice. We know that. So what have you been able to tell from what you can evaluate on what has happened from the time they've started practice till now? What have you learned about the team?
Well, that they have options on the offensive line. And we've seen some different formations with the line. They flip the tackles at times. They're 2 5-star tackles, so now sophomore tackles in Morris and Wright, at different times. I don't know that that's the way they'll line up in week one, but it's something that that they're cross-training right now. Now's the time to do that. A lot of offensive line coaches, and my partner on high school football broadcast, Don Mahoney, is big on it, that you cross-train, you teach concepts to where guys can be able to, in a pinch, slide over to another position, and now it's not as difficult to fill a gap, and now you have your 6th best lineman in, as opposed to maybe your 9th or 10th, because you're just keeping guys at one specific position. And he says that it's more difficult to hop over from one side to the other, more so than guard to tackle, if you teach those concepts properly. So I think this coaching staff believes in that, and that's why you're seeing guys move around a little bit. Cade Mays, at times, I think you're seeing him with the first team, and then they're also using other guys like Jerome Carvin and others, giving them looks in first unit type of groups when they're doing drills. So there's still a lot of fluctuation. There's not really guys, everybody's splitting reps equally. Jeremy Pruitt did drop a significant compliment on 5-star freshman quarterback Harrison Bailey. He said in one period yesterday when he said it, that Harrison Bailey really kind of shined. And shined is a pretty interesting description, because it makes it seem like he was the best of the group of quarterbacks. Now, he also said it was one period of one practice. So that's encouraging, that a guy like that, who already missed the first week of practice, could shine and stand out above the other quarterbacks as a true freshman. But also, he's just referring to one period. He's not saying that all last week Harrison Bailey shined. That's a different type of deal. Also, there's one of those offensive linemen that I mentioned that I thought was really impressive in the video that I've seen, and that's Javonte Spraggins, who's a kid from East St. Louis, Illinois. He lost 37 pounds in the offseason since he got to campus, and he was at 352. He's down to 315. And just when he'd do some of the striking drills, just look different. Some guys go through the motions. I mean, he was striking those pads held by a teammate and doing it with violence. And I don't know how many times I've been on the practice field. You guys know, if you've been out there, violent hands when you're talking about offensive and defensive linemen. And the kid did those drills right and is a big kid. So he was impressive to me. The wide receivers look good. Jalen Hyatt, I think, is a standout among the freshmen. So Henry Toto looks good. He's lost some weight, looks really mobile. And he's going to be, I think, an all-SEC player as a sophomore. So, but there's other guys, but I think, and Derek Ansley really complimented the defensive backs. Also, he said he needs them to be the strength of this defense, and that they have more depth back there. So a lot of little things you can pick up. It's not as good as being out there, Willie, as obviously, but still, if you pay attention, I think you can pick up some little things.
Vince Ferrara is with us, 99.1 The Sports Animal in Knoxville, and you didn't mention the guy that I was going to ask you about, so I'm glad that I'm able to do that. But Jeremy Banks, we've talked about him with the off the field stuff that he had last year, but it seems like he's rebounded from that. I know that he's come in ready to work. He's competing for a linebacker position. How much do you think we're going to see of Jeremy Banks this year, and could he be one of the starters at linebacker for this team alongside Tuoto, or if Kavarius Crouch does not get that starting spot?
I would give – Chase, it's a good question. I would give Crouch the edge right now, and Derek Ansley, when we talked to him last week, did reference as Banks behind Crouch. So I think that was a little nugget there. It doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. I mean, they might have had one padded practice at the time when he mentioned that, but that's just maybe where the starting point was. They've had a total of 3 today, 4 after today. So in pads, I think Banks is in a backup spot. I think you'll see him situationally at least to start. I would say he's behind Crouch, and then you know, you can see him in a couple of different positions inside and maybe even in a rush type of role on third down. So I think he'll play. He'll play a lot on special teams. That's where he can stand out because he is just on the run as a former running back, can be a big-time hitter, I think, on special teams. So I think he'll have a big role there, situational on defense. And let's see how Crouch does at his second inside backer position and if Banks can make a move. But right now I do think he is behind him in competing for playing time at linebacker.
When you were going through the positions, you did mention wide receiver. Of all the position battles right now, is that the one that maybe is that you're giving some attention to or the most attention, or it could be the most important just because replacing Marquez Callaway and of course, Juwan Jennings, how important that's going to be?
It's up there. It's one of the most intriguing. And then Tennessee announced last week that D'Angelo Gibbs, the Georgia transfer that sat out all of last year, he's decided not to play this season. Now, Pruitt said it wasn't because of COVID. It was because he wanted to concentrate on his academics. But that's interesting that he's not playing football this year because he was one of those sort of X-factor type of guys that's been around, hadn't played a ton, but you know, highly recruited guy that you thought, all right, maybe with the year off and working on this game, settling in a wide receiver, maybe he can be a guy that could make a difference at wide receiver. But now that leaves them without Gibbs. Now they have 10 scholarship wide receivers. 5 of them are true freshmen. So it's a young, unproven group for sure. And some of those guys that are experienced and not freshmen are unproven commodities. Ulis Jones Jr., who obviously has a track record with T. Martin transferring from USC, but he's been much more of a return guy. Can he take that next step and be a factor wide receiver? The Ramel Keaton, who flashed late in his freshman year, last year, who I really liked from that class, can he take that next step? But he doesn't have a ton of experience. Cedric Tillman has been around the program, but he's been spotty in his opportunities. And then Brandon Johnson didn't play much last year because of the injury. He redshirted, but he's a senior, and then the other senior being Josh Palmer. So a lot to be still proven in that group. Therefore, there are a lot of opportunities with those freshmen. Pruitt said that he's going to need all of them to play and have a role. I think one or two could have prominent roles, and then the other sort of trickling in, and as they're ready, they get more of a look. I think Hyatt is one of those guys that maybe even pushes for a starting spot, perhaps at slot. But he's a guy that knows all three receiver positions. Pruitt, Jim Chaney, teammates, a lot of guys have been complimenting him. So I think he's a guy with his run after the catch ability, big time speed, can help the quarterbacks. I think you'll also see running backs, Ty Chandler, split out wide a lot to maybe if those freshmen aren't ready right away, that could give them an extra option. And then also you need motion a guy out, you can help determine what coverage is, and that could help the quarterback also. So you can get Chandler in space. I think that will add another weapon that's not at receiver form. So it definitely is one of the most intriguing position battles on this team.
Interesting. Were you on our airwaves back 9 years ago? I'm trying to remember how long you've been on these airwaves.
I think you would.
I want to say you've been on from pretty much the get-go. I would think so.
I mean, the 9 years have flown by, and congrats to you guys and the station for it. It's amazing. You've seen the evolution of the station, so many versions of it, but you guys are as strong as ever, and it definitely is a pleasure to be on with you guys. I don't know if it's been 9 years, but pretty early
it's pretty darn close.
Yeah. Our thanks to you is you get a nice little graphic whenever you come on. We tweet that out.
So on Twitter.
That's how we show our appreciation.
Very impressed by that. So let's go on the resume, like at the top.
There you go.
And now you can add Tech Corps to that as well, to that resume.
Of course.
They enjoy it so much. So thank you for the visit, as always. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll do it again next week.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Vince Ferrara, powered by TechCore, providing you top-of-the-line IT service and Turner Security Systems right here in Nashville. We appreciate him joining us. Normally, it's every Monday at noon. Had to push it to Tuesday. Next week, we'll have to push it to Tuesday as well, because I don't know if you guys realize this. It's September. Yeah, it's Labor Day weekend coming up, and we're in September now. Can you believe it?
Do you remember? Okay, I won't sing. Sorry. Yes, well, it is September, Labor Day.
Kind of just did.
So. I know. But I could have gone longer, and I didn't.
Stay with us. He's done, okay? Hang with us. Thank you. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Not only did the SEC put out the CBS Game of the Week schedule, they also put out their schedule for where you can find these games. So their first weekend of conference play, first weekend of action in the SEC is going to be on Saturday, September 26th. And Florida is at Ole Miss. That will be an 11 o'clock start here, our time, on ESPN. Kentucky at Auburn will also be an 11 o'clock start here on SEC Network. So two games right out of the gates on Saturday, September 26th at 11 o'clock. Florida at Ole Miss, Kentucky at Auburn. And those games will be on ESPN and SEC Network. Then you've got a 3 p.m. game on SEC Network, Georgia at Arkansas. That night on ESPN, at 6 o'clock will be Alabama at Missouri. And then Tennessee at South Carolina will be the 6:30 SEC Network game. And then Vanderbilt at Texas A&M will also be a 6:30 game on SEC Network alternate. Do we have that?
Yeah.
Do we have the alternate?
I mean, I do. It's on several systems from what I've seen.
Oh, yeah, I've got it. Let's see if anything shows up.
I doubt there's anything on it right now.
Yeah, okay. It looks like I get it. Okay.
I never know how that works. It's there, and I guess the game just comes on when it's available, when it's needed.
Well, it's kind of like, just to put it in perspective, on DirecTV, like for you guys, Willie, there is Fox Sports Tennessee on my system basically activates whenever you guys are on. The rest of the time, there's another channel that it's like 646 is the main channel, and then 646-2 is Fox Sports Tennessee. So whenever the Preds play, that's what I have to go to. So it kind of sets up that way. It's weird, but you just got to know where to look.
Yeah, like right now, it looks like just an SEC Network Rubik's Cube. It says SEC Network alternate, and it just flips over squares, and then you'll see logos of the SEC team. So it's there. It's not just a blank screen, but I guess they don't have anything come up. So that'll be the first weekend worth of action. So pretty good. I mean, from 11 o'clock in the morning and then two 11 o'clock in the morning kickoffs, and then two 6:30 kickoffs, also a 6 o'clock kickoff. So three games in the nightcap. Then the following weekend, which will be the first Saturday in October, South Carolina at Florida will be an 11 o'clock game on ESPN. Missouri at Tennessee will be an 11 o'clock game on SEC Network. 3 o'clock will be Ole Miss at Kentucky, SEC Network. Auburn at Georgia will be 6:30 p.m. on ESPN. LSU at Vanderbilt will be at 6:30 on SEC Network. And by the way, LSU at Vanderbilt, so they'll be here 2 years in a row. And then Arkansas at Mississippi State will be the 6:30. So three 6:30 games, and that'll be on SEC Network alternate. So there you go. They've kind of released the first 2 weeks.
But you didn't mention the CBS game, right?
No, because that that was what I said.
Was ESPN, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, that was ESPN, but they also released the CBS. Some. September 26th, Mississippi State at LSU will be the on September 26th. That'll be the CBS game of the week at 2:30. So Mississippi State at LSU, October 3rd weekend that we just talked about will be Texas A&M at Alabama.
Right, and then
they have a week off. Well,
October 17th, Georgia at Alabama. That's
right,
a primetime game.
That is. That's a 7 o'clock game.
I like it. I'm here for that.
Yeah, Alabama at LSU is a 5 o'clock game.
Yep.
On November here for 14th. That too.
Here for that, too.
If you're interested in this kind of stuff, there's some pretty interesting articles written about how the TV networks scrambled to come together to divvy up who's on what channel with the rights and the picks. You know, customarily, every couple of weeks or every week they come out and say, okay, here's the schedule for games 2 weeks from now or whatever. What was it, 10 days in advance, 2 weeks in advance? They would come out with what games on what channel, what's going to be the CBS game. So they had to do all that. So they had to have a lot of people from a lot of networks come together to redo the television schedule. So kudos to them to be able to come to this agreement, right, so that us as fans have the slate that we're looking for because they've been scrambling.
They have been scrambling. But wanted to pass that along because that was put out there today by the SEC, their ESPN programming and their CBS Game of the Week program, at least especially concrete for the first 2 weeks. Now,
it just means more.
It does. We talked yesterday about the kicking situation and is there a real battle? And we were thinking at first, is it just a real battle, as we were talking about last week, between Greg Joseph and Tucker McCann? But now, as Adam Schefter reported yesterday after we got off the air, the Titans have indeed worked out Stephen Hauschka and a couple of Stevens, Stephen Kaskowski and Stephen Hauschka, that they have been worked out by the Titans. And you do wonder where this is going. You know, it does seem like if they're looking at those guys, maybe they're not pulling the trigger right now, but it's saying, hey, the minute this goes, like last year, which how many kickers did they use? I think I lost count. Three?
17.
Well, three, I think right? Let's go back through it because they started the season thinking that Ryan Succop would be ready, and he wasn't physically, right? So it went right up to the last. Remember, he kicked in that weird game that it rained. They played the Steelers. Remember, what did the TV station call it? The Battle of the River or whatever? On the River. Something yeah. Like
Rumble on the River.
It's a preseason game. But Ryan Succop kicked in that game, I think. And then they determined after the preseason's over, he's not physically ready. So didn't they open? Was Cairo Santos the opening day guy or was he the second guy?
He was opening day.
So they had Cairo, who had
your Titans kickers.
So he struggled. And then they brought Succop back in there, and he struggled. And that's when they came up with Joseph, right? So it was three different guys, if I remember. Was there a fourth guy?
No, he was a punter. Ryan Santoso, he was a punter. Yeah, so it was those three guys.
Well, he was doing kickoffs, right, at one point? They had a guy that was doing kickoffs, which is part of the job description, is if you're going to win the job, are you doing only field goals or are you doing field goals and kickoffs? Because that's two roster spots if you're not doing the kickoffs.
Yeah, Santos played five games, Succop played six games, Parkey played three games, Joseph played two games.
So Parkey.
Yeah, Cody Parkey.
Cody Parkey. I forgot about him. The Bears guy, the double doink. I forgot he was in there.
Double doink. I'll never live.
So that was four kickers.
Yeah, four kickers.
Plus a kickoff guy.
And that's pretty hard to do considering they never attempted field goals. Hardly. Right?
Well, I mean, I'm
getting fuzzy now. Why did they go from Parkey to Joseph?
Well, because they went from Santos to Parkey because Santos missed everything in the Bills game. And then...
then it was Parkey to Suckup?
Yeah, and then Suckup...
to not get the job done. Yeah, right, just not himself.
There. And then they went to Joseph. I think that's right.
Wow.
This day in history in Titans kickers.
Right, because it wasn't... Suckup was on injured reserve until a certain point, right? I guess so that's why Parkey was let go.
Was he on IR or PUP?
Well, whatever the one is that you can come back at a certain point. I think it was injured reserve,
yeah,
if I had to guess. But it's the same idea that he was going to be eligible at a certain date. And once he came back, they gave him the job, and he wasn't himself. So all that to say, it was musical chairs. So I guess what they're seeing now would indicate that what they've seen, they're not sold on any of the guys they have. Don't you think?
I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Yeah.
You just would rather not have to be thinking every week, do we like our kicker or do we want a different kicker? It's such a secure thing to know that this is the guy, he's going to be the guy, we can worry about the gazillion other things that you have to worry about. And all those other guys, these other guys have been proven, you know, reliable kickers for a long time. Gostkowski and Hauschka, they've put in a lot of time. But the question is, because as we saw with Suckup, who, by the way, the Bucks just brought in, right? So maybe he's physically healthy and he's in a better place now and he can get back to being the consistent guy that he was for a long time. Could be something physical that throws you off a little bit, and that's all it takes for you to lose your job.
So Santos was kicking in Cleveland to start the season.
Correct.
So they started the season off. In fact, he nailed a 53-yarder. I was there. I remember that now. And so how long did Santos go?
His last game was Buffalo, because remember, he missed. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
He kicked the next week against Indy.
And that was he missed one there.
Yep.
Then the next week was at Jacksonville.
In the rain.
In the rain.
Didn't come down to him in that game.
Nope. No field goals there. Then
Atlanta.
The next week would have been Atlanta. And that was Santos there.
Right. Didn't really factor in.
Didn't factor. Yeah, they didn't really need him there, although he did connect on one in the dome. Then the next week you're saying is when all, you know what, broke loose. The Buffalo game?
Well, that was the Buffalo game where he missed some key ones. That game was right in there.
There weren't key ones. Didn't he miss them all? Like, I think he had like three misses in that game.
I think you're right.
Now, their poor play cost them because they
had so many ways they could have won that game. Same thing with the Colts.
I'm trying to.
But this is part of our. I'm trying to go back through it in my mind. It seemed like every week we were saying there's so many other ways they could be winning. But the fact is, if the kicking was dead lock solid, they would have had a couple more wins in there.
Yeah, and then Parkey came in. Parkey would have come in the next. He was the next.
The Titans were 0-4 in that game against the Bills.
Yeah, and that was all Santos.
Yeah, 0-4.
And that was week 5?
Field goals made and attempted. Field goals made, 0. Attempts, 4.
Ouch.
Yikes.
Ouch.
So there you go. That would be under the category of all you know what broke loose.
Right, so they're still stinging from that, I'm sure. And as we pointed out, Joseph did the job, but he wasn't asked to do much. So it's hard to know what they thought of him. And I think it's fair to ask the question, would you rather have Hauschka, who's kicked for a lot of good teams, kicked in Buffalo, which is probably the toughest place that you can kick, because you're going to have a minimum of 3 games, maybe more some seasons, where it's brutal with the wind and or snow, whatever, to try to do what you need to do. So he's been through a lot. What's he got left, and what's, you know, Gostkowski at this point? Gostkowski was as reliable as there was for about a decade And then all of a sudden he lost it last year. Does he have it back?
I do wonder why they didn't bring Parkey in for Parkey's a free agent. He was 3 for 3. He missed one extra point. But, I mean, he in his three games.
So the next game is against Denver. They got shut out. Nothing happened there.
That was Parkey. Parkey was on the roster.
That was
though.
The nightmare. That was the end of the Marcus Mariota era.
Right, but Parkey then they played the Chargers in that crazy game here, and Parkey connected on a 45-yard field goal in that game.
But that was his extra point that he missed. Yeah.
Yeah, and then that's
he was
right.
3 for 3 against Tampa the next week. But then Suckup was taken off of IR for week 9, and that's when they went back to Suckup.
Yeah, he did.
Now it all comes together.
Yes.
It took us a while to come back through there, didn't it?
I know.
Oh, my gosh. There was a lot of plot twists there. But I don't know what the answer to your question is, Darren, on Parkey, why he's not in the equation somewhere this year. They've tried a lot of other people out.
Yeah,
so why not Parkey?
He tried out with the Bucs. And then, ultimately, I guess they've gone with Suckup. So the Bucs are like they're going to sign Titans kickers now.
I'm not going to pretend to tell you who the right guy is. I just think that what you have to hope is, because they may all be capable in their own way, you just hope the guy gets off to the right start, the first key kick he has to make. It might be in that Monday night game, but as we saw last year, you might go 3 weeks without having to make a big kick other than extra points. But when if you can get off to a good start mentally and you draw the confidence from that, you have the team being confident in you, then it can be smooth sailing for a while. You only get stronger there. You become sort of a guy that nobody has to think about. Suckup got to that before he got hurt, and maybe he'll get back to that, you know? But it can snowball. If you miss a big kick early, then all of a sudden it's like, well, did we choose the right guy? Maybe we should bring in a guy for a tryout. What about the next time? And the whole team has that thought. Everybody's thinking the same thing. That's why it's such a tough job.
Well, Gostkowski has obviously the best track record. The question is, where is he? Didn't he have – what surgery did he have again? Was that hip? He had some surgery, so he – you know, it's just a matter of his health. Hauschka – I'm looking at kind of his career numbers. Obviously, he was pretty darn good in Seattle. Wasn't horrible in Buffalo. Last year, let's see. He attempted 10 field goals between 40 and 49. He made 9 of them. He attempted 5 50-plus, only made 1. And was 7 for 8, 30 to 39, and 5 or perfect on field goals from 20 to 29, then I guess you've got extra points in there. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Greg Joseph, it's hard to say anything because he hasn't done it. Like, these two guys have done it for a long time. Joseph has not. So we just kind of chalked it up. Well, it was the Browns. They stunk. And then he's been here and he's attempted 1 field goal. So how do we really know?
We don't.
So what do you do?
Well,
you go with what you know or what you don't know.
Clearly, the practice, how you do in practice, has to mean something. In the everyday, you know, here's what we're setting up. We're going to try to make this game like you got to make these. That if he were doing really really well in that every day, then maybe you wouldn't have to look around. But I don't see what they're doing every day. I read people put up, you know, one day he's 5 for 5, the next day he's 4 for 5, or he missed a 54-yarder.
Right.
So I don't know how they put that into their evaluation.
Do we have Coach on the line?
We do.
Do we need to take a quick break and come back and
let's go
over to West End?
Yeah, we'll step out real quick and then go to West End.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Derek Mason is on the line with us. We'll talk to him on the other side. Darren Donica Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Well, we've been doing these shows from home for, gosh, 6 months now, and it's been very smooth. The only thing that is a little tricky at times, guys, is when I don't have a phone screener. So we're just sitting here chatting away, and Coach Mason is on the line with us. So Derek Mason is with us. Coach, sorry about that. I had no clue you were sitting there, and you had to sit there and listen to us talk about kickers, which, you know, I don't know how you feel about that, but I apologize.
Darren and Willie, man, it's good to hear your voices.
I know. It's good to hear yours. I bet it must be nice to be out there and to see your kids again, right, and just kind of go through. I know it's been weird, and we've talked throughout all this weirdness, but you have to feel great getting back into your element being out on the field.
It's good to be back. You know, you look at it and you say, man, you can't wait for it to come. But really, when you're in the midst of it, it helps you understand, you know, how much it really does mean to you. It's therapeutic. It's therapeutic for our guys. It's therapeutic, you know, for coaches. You know, for the organization. I mean, this is what we do. This is you know, our time. It's a time to really work on your craft, work on your skills, and you know, man, find a way to get better and do it together. So right now it's a focus group, and it's definitely learning how to be this group is learning how to be accountable to one another. So we love it and we enjoy it.
How long is it going to take you, Derek, to hit Zach Cunningham up for a donation?
You know what? Hey, I'm just happy for Zach. Man, you're talking about, you know, how long? I think the phone was already hot. You know, the time he signed on the dotted line. No, you know what? We don't need anything from Zach. I definitely appreciated, you know, man, what he did here. He continues to give back. He continues to have, you know, conversations with some guys that are still here, guys that he played with, like Bryce Lewis. You know, he reaches out to Javon. Hey, man, we've had a chance to talk, you know, in a little bit. I've just enjoyed watching him mature. You know, when you saw Zach here, you understood how good a football player he was to do what he did in the SEC. But to go to that level and to be one of the leading tacklers and one of the top tacklers in the league over the last couple of years, it really speaks to not only the talent but the work ethic, because it's a tougher league. I mean, hey, man, you're playing against some of the best in right now. You know, I mean, he's seen as an elite player, and he is one of the best at his position. Love it.
Do you ever, whenever you know, through all these years, whenever you've seen a player, you know, wow everybody, does it wow you? I've always wondered, you know, the play just hurdles everybody, but they made a rule because of Zach Cunningham. And does that wow you, or is it just us that get wowed by certain things that happen?
I get wowed too. I'm a fan. I'm a sports fan. I'm a football fan. And Zach Cunningham wowed me almost every day.
Really?
He never missed a practice. He never missed a practice. And
wow,
to watch him practice was a work of art, because the way he played on Saturday was just a big picture piece of what you saw day to day. I mean, he was one of those guys that played the game the right way. He understood what practice meant. And, you know, for him, I mean, he's just doing it at a different level now. But the drive, it's good to see that his ability to work at his craft hasn't changed. And, you know, he just continues to get better. So that's a testament to Zach Cunningham, his family, how hard he's worked. But, you know, Vanderbilt aided in that. So, you know, kudos to the Commodores. Love it.
Now, along those lines, Coach, and I'm curious, because I know everybody develops differently, but can you tell early on when a kid has something special? Like I said, I know sometimes it happens in different stages, but is there times when you just know, like, just whether it's work ethic, what you were just talking about, always there, their drive, their what's in their DNA, kind of their makeup? Can you tell pretty early on with kids if they're really special? Or is it hard to at this age?
Well, you know what? Most times you can. I mean, if they exhibit, you know, maybe special attributes like awareness, an uncanniness to find the football, the ability to get the ball out of the air, you know, some exaggerated skill that you just don't see every day. A lot of times you do see it early. But some guys, you know, develop it late. Some guys work themselves to that. I remember Jordan Matthews talking to me about, you know, his maturation and what it looked like for him. And he felt like he got better as he got older. And so you see some guys have it, you know, in the beginning, and some guys are just in the making. I mean, they're pushing themselves towards, you know, what they will eventually become. And for coaches, it's just about being patient. It's about, you know, taking the journey with them, challenging these guys, asking, you know, like these guys to get uncomfortable and compete every day so that they can be the best version of themselves. But you can't be the best version of yourself if you're trying to be comfortable. Okay, it doesn't add up in what we do.
Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason on the line with us. So how are the early returns? Do you like what you see thus far? I mean, how is it going to this point?
You know what? We're new. I love it. I mean, it's fantastic. It's a new year. It's got its own challenges. But, you know, with that, just grinding on these pieces. Got some returning pieces defensively with a new defensive coordinator, and that's gelling on the offensive side of the ball. Coach Fitch is evaluating, everything from the quarterback position to, you know, putting this offensive line together. And I think it's the puzzle, okay, maybe that keeps us, awake at night. It's the idea of putting, the pieces of the puzzle together, making sure that you can utilize the young man's skill sets and make sure that you can, continue to help grow, the skill, the ability to learn, the awareness, and try to push that towards the college football season. And that's where we're at right now. It's good because, we're getting better. And as you get better, you start to understand that the accountability piece for everybody to be accountable to each other is something that we have to, continue to be invested in, and then just being focused. And that's where we are right now. We're focused.
Talking to Derek Mason, head football coach at Vanderbilt. Coach, great to talk to you again. And I'm curious about your guys, how they've handled these last few weeks as they've watched, different areas of the country, different levels of football. Some kids aren't getting the opportunity to play. I would have to think that's one thought for some of your players anyway, to say, you know what, we're getting a chance that not everybody's getting right now to play the game we love.
You're right in saying or giving the observation that it is a privilege to play the game. I think, I've constantly, tried to not necessarily remind them, but just, talk about it. Because I think, this is a game that you get the opportunity to play. So, like, in that, just maximize the opportunity. Utilize, the time that you have, because we are out here. We're on the grass, and some young men across the country, talented players, across different programs, don't have this opportunity. So take this opportunity to get better. Don't discount, your role, because everybody's got a role to play in this. So when you get better, we get better, and that's where this team is moving. I mean, it's united in that. It's united in that it understands that it is a privilege, and we're going to take full advantage of it.
How difficult has it been for you? I think you alluded to this on one of your recent media calls, where somebody was saying, okay, you guys had to shut it down for a couple of days, and you said, hey, these are college kids, and they have their habits. They're so excited to see their friends that haven't seen, just like a regular college student would be. But you have to be very mindful of meeting the protocols with your daily habits. You got to change some habits, especially as a college student, to make sure that you do the things you need to do to stay eligible to play and to do what we're all dealing with right now. How difficult has that been to get across to college students?
You're always looking for ways to really, spin, where you're at, the space that you're in, different ways to look at it. And, that we have been good, for so long. We have been here, 8 weeks, 2 months, and had done a really good job. But it's like anything else, you can get comfortable, okay? You can let your guard down. And, because we let our guard down, we found ourselves in a space where we had a couple of positives. And so when we looked at it, we had to press pause, for health, safety, and welfare reasons for our organization and for our student athletes. And that was an eye-opening, piece for us, because we started to take for granted that everybody was in that space where everybody was just, toeing the line. But, in this, maybe they're young people. And, young people sometimes think they're invincible. And they're not. We're not. you know, what everybody does in this circle affects everybody else. And that's why we talk about the accountability piece. But in this, what we were able to do was talk about, you know, in our protocols and going back to, okay, well, where did it get off track? Okay, what were we missing? And, you know, like there was just some intentional conversations about people coming back and having to assume that everybody around you, you know, is positive. As much as you want to, as much as you want to congregate, as much as you want to, you know, go play video games and I know you haven't seen, you know, some friends for a couple of months. We have to stay on task, okay? And they got it. You know what? Sometimes, but it doesn't take you having to touch a hot stove three or four times before you get it. And, you know, it was a great reminder to us that, you know, man, we have to be careful. We have to be conscious about our masks, social distancing, you know, how we, you know, congregate together. And our young man, you know, man, took that to heart. And now, you know, we're back at this thing, okay? We came off pause. We started moving forward. We've had our fourth practice, you know, since the pause, and we're doing good things. We're getting better, and they know in order for us to get better, okay, man, we got to be available, you know, because the best ability is availability. So in order for us to get better, we got to practice, and that's what we're doing.
We've all kind of had our own experience with the virus. Some people, you know somebody that knows somebody that's been affected. You know, other people maybe haven't been as affected. Dimitri Moore went through a process, one of your key players. He lost his grandfather. Anybody who could put himself in his shoes would realize how much that would affect your decision of, you know, can I play? Should I be playing? So he went through a process there. Tell us your role in that process. I know you're really happy to have Dimitri out there.
Yeah, I'm glad and Dimitri is back. And, you know, I just listened to Dimitri. I mean, man, he gave his coach and myself, you know, his thoughts. And, you know, all we're there to do is listen and resource. It's not about talking to young men into anything. It's about, you know, hearing what he has to say and then just providing the information that you have. And we just didn't have enough information about, you know, some of the things he wanted to know at the time. And, you know, he misses his grandfather's funeral. And that was tough on Dimitri. I mean, it really was. And, we talked. We've had, you know, players, coaches, you know, men lose loved ones, you know, in the midst of the pandemic. And I mean, it's been hard on everybody. And I think because we are close enough, we can, you know, share, you know, experiences. I think, he understood, that if he needed to walk away, that's what he needed to do for him. And that, you know, if any point in time, you know, he needed, you know, some more information or wanted to be heard, just call. And he reached out. He called, you know, maybe, you know, 2 weeks later, you know, some more information to come out. I think he had a chance to digest everything that had gone on around him. And listen, there's just a lot going on right now, you know, from social justice issues to, you know, losing family members to, you know, should I be playing or is this safe? And we had a long conversation, man, that wasn't about, football. It was just about life. And, you know, in that, you know, Dimitri said, Coach, I mean, I'm glad we talked. I just wanted to tell you I was coming back. I said, okay, sounds good. I mean, man, you know, we love you and, you know, glad to have you back. And I think that's sort of the relationship, man, that my team and I have, our coaches, our staff. It's about full development. You know, you're not going to agree with everything a young man does, but, you know, man, you've got to be there for him, you know, as much as you can. And you know, in this time, I mean, there was nothing to be, you know, I mean, downtrodden about. I mean, he did what was best for him, and then when he decided to come back, you know, he felt like that was best for him. So all we do is applaud and resource.
We're talking to Derek Mason, Vanderbilt football coach, here with us. And you brought up your coordinators, your new coordinators earlier, Todd Fitch and Ted Roof. And, you know, I'm excited to see what they bring to your staff and to your program, as I know you are. But as somebody that has done this for as long as you have, you've been here obviously several years now, how big of an opportunity is it for you to bring in new voices and to learn as you continue to grow as a head coach and as a coach overall?
You know, growing as a head coach is an essential part of what we do. And in my time here, you know, I've had, you know, experienced coordinators, and I've had some coordinators, men who have been at different places. But, you know, this time, like for me, it seems to be the right fit at the right time. You know, both of these gentlemen have been in coaching as long as I've been in coaching. They put their eyes down, and work for a long time, at their skills and crafts. Coach Roof's been a head coach, and he's coached at institutions, like this. He was at Duke. He was at, Georgia Tech, played at Georgia Tech. And I can say the same thing about Coach Fitch, having been at Boston College. He knows and understands, young people in this space, how hard they work on both sides of it. And, they're nuanced enough and experienced enough to understand that it's about players. What do they do? What do our players do best? And how can we put them in the best position, for overall team success? And it's about big team, little me. And they've been able to spin that message and really create some spacing here where our student athletes, have really responded to what they brought to the table. They have experience, but they've tailor-made it. I mean, they've almost made offense and defense turnkey for these players. And that's important. The messaging's on point, the ability to listen, to pivot, to adjust, it has been outstanding. And it's really helped me. It's helped me, see, what I need to see, stand on the platform that I need to stand on, which is sometimes 100,000 feet as I get in the weeds of, daily practice. I need to be able to see, how people are responding, to the coaching, to the schemes, where do we need to go? How can I resource our coaches? All this has been apparent over the last, 9 months. And so I'm thankful and grateful, to the administration for allowing me to make these changes. And we're headed in the right direction. I'm excited about 2020. And now what we got to do is get ourselves ready for September 26th when we line up versus Texas A&M.
Derek, I ask this because I really don't know the answer, but I'm curious about it. Your head coach at Vanderbilt, Mike Vrabel, the head coach of the Titans, what kind of relationship, if any, do you two have? Do you talk to him? You're both defensive guys. You've been coordinators. You've been head coaches. I'm just curious if there's a conversation that happens at all between you two.
We have talked. And, we spent time together. We got a common friend in Kirk Herbstreit. Who we get an opportunity to hang out with. We haven't had a chance as much during COVID, obviously with social distancing and sure. What we're trying to do. But, we had known each other before, had really respected each other's work, understood how we had climbed, the collegiate and professional ladders. But when we got to Nashville, Braves got to Nashville, Kirk actually got us together, and it was fun. I mean, man, because we hit it off right away. I mean, we are, defensive minds. We do have, defensive backgrounds, defensive, mentalities, but we also have children, and we have families. And we talk as much about those things as we did football, but I think, we're kindred spirits in terms of how we see ball. I love, what he's done with his organization. The mentality, the physicalness, the mindset, how they play. I've tried to pick his brain a little bit as to, what things in his space are really important. And granted, college football and professional football are different, but I think, leadership qualities, the ability to, impact your team, be on point with your messaging and lead guys to places that they haven't gone before are something that we both share. So, I'm a big fan of Rage, for sure.
Derek, let's wrap it up with you telling us about your starting quarterback.
Starting quarterback. Listen, we're working on that right now. Okay, we got four talented quarterbacks, and they all bring something different to the table. People have heard me say that before, but right now, we're seven practices in. I lost a couple of guys. When we had to press pause, and a couple of these guys were in, quarantine. So now, they're working their way back, but the young quarterbacks have done well. Ken Seals and Mike have done a good job with the reps that they've been given. And you're starting to see the confidence come with those guys. So, it's confidence, it's chemistry, it's consistency, it's all those things. With Danny and Jeremy Musa, these young men are talented. I mean, it's a competitive room. It's not combative. These guys you know, all want the job, but these guys understand, man, that it's got to be a healthy quarterback room in order for us to get to where we try, where we want to go. So right now, these guys are competing. I'll let you know somewhere, you know, around like September 21st, okay? I know you're going to mark that on your calendar as the day that Coach Mason said he's going to say something.
But, we'll call you.
But we'll address it as we get a little closer, you know, to that. Right now, we're still evaluating.
I may have gotten you in year one, but I knew I had no chance, but I thought it was worth a shot, you know?
Coach Mason says
September 21st, we need to call. All right.
September 21st, man. Mark it on your calendar.
Hey, good to talk to you again. We're excited. Hey, it's September, so we're definitely excited. Thanks for doing this, as always. We're looking forward to talking to you every week.
Let's do this, fellas. Take care. See you soon.
All right, you do the same. Derek Mason, Vanderbilt football coach. I tried. He's got four potential starting quarterbacks. But he told us on September 21st he's going to narrow it down to one, and hopefully we'll find out then. All right, we'll come back. Fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.